Hey, CS Psychos, Rachel Provan here. And today we're going to be joined by our very first guest, Bob London. He's going to teach us a radically authentic way of asking questions that get the real story of what's going on with your customers, their company, and whether or not they plan to renew your service. That's all coming up next, right here on Psychology of Customer Success.
Humans don't think or behave like computers. You can't just run a command and get them to do what you want them to do. So why are you still basing your CS strategy based solely on logic? I'm Rachel Provan, CS leadership coach, award-winning CS strategist, and certified psych nerd. I teach CS leaders how to build and scale world-class CS departments using a combination of strategy, leadership, and mindset, using my secret weapon, psychology. Come join me every Wednesday for Psychology of Customer Success, where we'll dive into why people do the things they do, what motivates them, and the effect that has on your CS strategy, team dynamics, and executive presence. Make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure to share it with your CS bestie. Talk soon, and here's to your success.
Okay, so welcome back to Psychology of Customer Success. And today is very exciting because I am having my first guest. And I really wanted it to be Bob London, because when I went to the Churn Zero conference in 2023, I heard him do these series of questions that you can ask customers that really get so much more out of them. And it absolutely blew my mind, the level to which he understood customer psychology. A little bit about Bob, if you're living under a rock. He's a customer success discovery and listening expert who teaches companies how to have more strategic and revealing conversations that drive engagement, insights, and revenue. He was named both 22 and 23 as a top 25 customer success influencer, and he conducted more than 2,700 customer discovery conversations with decision makers. I don't want to have 2,700 discussions ever. And he used those to develop a series of bold, disruptive questions and listening techniques called Radically Authentic Discovery Method that get customers and prospects to open up about what's most important to them. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you so much. It's actually an honor to be here, to be the first person that you're talking. Yeah, no, seriously, I've admired your work likewise. And I love I love how you approach things. And when I saw that you had a podcast and the title of the podcast, I was eager to help any way I could. It's a great idea.
Hey, I'm so excited. And you and I both know that it's the people. You can't get around the fact that we're working with people, we're selling to people, we're helping people achieve outcomes. And you can't do that without psychology and without listening and understanding.
You can. And we always joke about AI taking over the world. I'm not sure what role AI will have in psychology. Maybe I missed it and it's already happened and it's already taken over. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. But you're right.
You know,
in the meantime, we need humans.
You can't do it. You can possibly do it, but you can't do it, is what I would say.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump right in because I have so many questions to ask you. So talk to me about radical authentic discovery. I love that it's called RAD, by the way. So what is it?
It's basically a set of tools and techniques and a framework that helps you have a much more open-ended, unstructured conversation about them, the customer. And so it's got in it questions, which you've alluded to, that I call disruptive questions and deep listening techniques. But the main emphasis is just, what is a strategic customer conversation? That's what I always hear from CS leaders that they want their teams to have. It's just the ability to turn the lens over on the customer and find out what's going on in their world, what's important to them. Spoiler alert, the customer is not obsessed with our product or solution as much as they are their own challenges and priorities and feeling like a successful human being in their job, back to the human theme. And by the way, the only reason their job exists is because their company thinks it's important and they expect something from it. And so if you take all that together, radically authentic discovery is, the toolkit and the framework to understand what's most important to the customer, how they define success, how they define value.
That's amazing. It works so well, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But first, I have to ask you, after looking at your website, I had to laugh. What does STFU stand for?
Oh,
to you.
So I am a former recovering marketing guy. And so from time to time, I have a creative spark. And one of them was, I could talk about the importance of listening when you meet with enough people and they go, yeah, we listen to our customers. So I decided, is there another way to say it? And I started playing around with you got to just basically shut up and listen. And that translated into STFU, which actually translated into $TFU because it's about revenue. But in my world, it stands for silence till you fully understand. And that's where I came out, was that kind of says it all. If you keep listening in order just simply to respond to what the customer's saying or address or sell or solve their point of view, then you're going to end up going around in the same loop that you've been going on. But if you really are quiet and able to embrace silence, which is one of the listening tips, until you fully really get what they're saying and why they're saying it's important, that's STFU or $TFU, as it were.
I love it. It reminds me a lot of Chris Voss's work, Never Split the Difference, which I was so shocked wasn't more exerting your influence on others, but really tapping into the humanity of others. And he was a top FBI hostage negotiator.
Sure.
This has been validated, people. And it's so cool how it just ties back to listening and caring about humans and actually focusing on someone other than yourself, which is harder than it seems, even for us who care about other people.
So, it is harder than it seems.
Yeah.
And I think I think part of it is, as professionals, I'll just stick with the professional world because I'm not going to say I'm a great listener outside of work. And my family always reminds me in a very funny, sarcastic way that I'm not as great a listener. So I would say that, look, we are all trained to talk, to pitch, to put sentences together, to present slides, to keep going, to keep talking about value or our definition of value, to keep talking about things like these crazy things called features. Why? Because we have an agenda and we have things we want to accomplish. And the over choreographing sometimes of customer interactions is what causes us to get on a roll and all the check boxes, the things we need to cover. And it really squeezes the life out of the meeting, because it doesn't allow for the customer to talk about what's important to them. In fact, some of the most happy accidents that I've heard about among folks that I've worked with are when they're all ready to give a QBR and they're still going to use some of the disruptive questions that I've taught them and hopefully some listening techniques. And one of the stories I'll never forget is going to the customer's site for a meeting, and there was a fire alarm evacuation, and the customer said, let's go to a restaurant. And it was an account manager who said afterwards, recounted to me that she just did not feel right opening her laptop in this restaurant and going through 38 slides and 287 bullet points or whatever. And she said, the strangest thing happened. We just had a conversation. And the outcome was she found out some things that were incredibly important that she wouldn't have known before. And the customer at the end put the cherry on top by saying, thanks. She said, why are you thanking me? You just gave me an hour of your time. He said, because I don't think I've ever had a conversation with a vendor where we've gotten to talk about what's important to us. And so that, ladies and gentlemen, is the lesson, is there's so much inside the customer's head that they're willing to share. We're not prying. We're actually doing them a service by asking. And so I think I'm swimming upstream in this regard, because I'm teaching people to, again, just shut up and listen a little bit more. There are others like me trying to do that, but we are a tiny minority in the world of where the loudest voice and the best talker wins in many cases. I guess I'll just wrap it up by saying that the data would say that what you say to a customer is only as impactful and compelling as what you already learned from them. So if you are talking, it's because you're being on point to something that you believe will help them. So that's how I would describe it.
Amazing. I always think of it when I'm teaching people to coach, because I think a lot of the time, it's not just because we want the spotlight. It's, oh, I can help you. I can make this faster and easier for you. And you're going to be so happy. And then I'm going to be the hero. We'll both feel great. And you're so busy thinking oh, I can help them. Oh, and I'm going to tell them this and this, that you miss what they're saying. And you're probably giving them the wrong advice now. Also, if they haven't asked, they probably don't want it.
I've heard that many times from my own children who are now adults. And hey, I'll ask them how they're working. How was work? And yeah, this happened. Is it? Oh, have you done this? Dad, I was just talking. I wasn't asking for advice. It's the best thing because it reminds me of what you just said. It's such an important lesson.
And it's so much harder with kids because you're used to guiding them. And my mother still does this to me at 44. And whenever she gives me a suggestion, they're often good. But I'm like, yes, Mom, I tried that. I'm not an idiot. I'm an adult. And
I'll just say this. And it's a big moment for me and I think my wife as well. It is such a relief to put down the bag of rocks that is having to feeling like it's our responsibility or my job to help them in their job. They're 22, 23, 26 years old. So it's not only is it better for them, I believe, it's so much better for me personally. I don't give advice on areas where I'm not an expert, but I will just say for me, example of one, it's a relief. But it didn't happen. It's huge. And obviously the older they are, the easier it gets to let go. But yeah, that's my lesson.
That's amazing. And I think that you're a rare breed in that you don't necessarily give advice on things that you're not an expert in.
Hello, LinkedIn.
Hey, I can't talk. I'm on there every day. So I have a question about this. Does it differ depending on who you're talking to? Would you ask different questions, listen in a different way? Like, how do you use this when you're talking to, say, an executive sponsor versus your traditional point of contact, who's the middleman between the executive sponsor and the end user?
That's a great question. The answer is the questions are the same regardless of who you're speaking with. The reason is because you want to keep your aperture open no matter who you're speaking with. If you're talking to, and I've done it all, I've interviewed office managers, systems administrators, network security, project managers, CFOs, CEOs in my journey. And I think what you want to do for everybody is to make them feel heard and to show them by your question that you respect the fact that they know more than just what's in their little cubby hole. And it works because when you ask I'll give you a perfect example. One of the first questions I ask in every single conversation, it doesn't matter who I'm speaking with, is, so if I could sneak into your next board meeting or executive leadership meeting, what is the number one priority or challenge I would hear them discussing for the coming year? So if I'm talking to someone really senior, they have a little more proximity to what might be going on in senior leadership meetings and they talk about it. But the people throughout the organization also understand what the priorities are. Why? Because companies are doing a better job of being transparent and flowing information throughout the organization. And why is that? Because people are demanding it. They want to know why they're doing the job they're doing. So people are able to really give you richness. And even if they don't, in every case, it's very disarming to start the conversation by asking about their world, not just diving in and saying, what do you think of us? How's product adoption going? Or we have stats. But you're treating them like a full human, as opposed to just defining them as a user or a customer, which is nothing particularly wrong with that. But you get so much more out of it when you treat them as someone who knows something more than what you think of them as. They're defined by their challenges, not your product.
Absolutely. I remember in the speech you gave, you played us a tape that was authorized, but where we actually listened to a conversation that used some of these questions. And in the beginning, you ask people, all right, we've talked to this person. They said they're going to renew. Like, what's the likelihood they're going to renew? And I think it was like 90% were like, yeah, like we're good here. And then you had him ask a few more questions. And maybe 10 minutes later, it was like, oh my God, this company is in serious risk of churning. And if you hadn't continued to ask these questions, you would be blindsided. It's like, he literally told me that he would renew tomorrow. So that's great. But the executive sponsor left. So that doesn't really matter. Members.
That's exactly right. And I think I try not to use the peel the onion, but yeah, I think if you are able to stay quiet and just keep asking and listening and don't assume, I wrote something today about having happy ears where you, as soon as you hear the good stuff, you say, okay, done, we're good, green, not as opposed to red or yellow. if you keep going, then you find out that there are other things at play. It could be the economy. It could be the fact that this person is reporting to someone different. It could be the fact that there's a really aggressive, cheaper competitor. And the reason this person would reveal that is because you asked another question, which is, say, if you got a call from a competitor, how would you react? Would you ignore or reach out to them? So you put it all, you have to put it all together, which is not hard, but you have to be willing to ask questions you don't know the answer to, which is it sometimes takes some guts. And you have to ask questions that are on the customer's terms, not yours. So the more you ask about things like board meeting and competition, those are things that happen in their world all the time that they have to deal with. And it, you're waking up that part of their brain that says, oh, Rachel's asking me this really good question. It almost doesn't feel like a vendor. And that's what you want, is you want to feel like a human. So that's how a little peek at how it seems to work inside the brain.
Something else that occurred to me, and this could just be because of my people-pleasery nature, in the same way that when you're like, oh, why are you leaving us? Oh, we just don't have the budget. That's just the same as in a breakup. It's not you, it's me. It's I don't want to have to confront you about this. It's not going to do me any good to tell you why you suck, because you're just going to argue with me. And
right.
There's nothing in it for me. So how do you avoid that? Do these questions help you get around the sort of people-pleasery nature? Because I know for me, I might be uncomfortable being like, you know what? Yeah, I actually am talking to some people. I'm better at it now. But when I was younger, I'd be like, we're great. Everything's great.
So that's a great point. So I think that the way these conversations are meant to unfold using this radically authentic discovery approach is by the time you ask a question like the one about, hey, if you got a call from our competitor, you've already nudged open the door by modeling for the customer some boldness in the questions and courage. There's some vulnerability there. They're thinking, man, that's a good question. Pretty good question for a vendor to ask. They must really want to know the truth. And by the time you get to the competitor question, which is you could ask three questions in a conversation like this, or one or six, they feel like, okay, I guess they really want to know. And I would say that all what you said, though, is so important, especially for customer success, which by nature, folks are giving, generous, helpful, authentic, transparent, and helpful again, is that they feel like they're imposing by asking bold questions. And what I always tell them is, look, I'm not here to sell you on the idea of asking this question. What I'm telling you is customers love the questions. We hesitate because of our own hesitation, not because of anything that's going to happen. There's never all the almost 3,000 conversations I've done and the many hundreds of folks that I've worked with who've gotten back to me, I've never heard a story where the customer pushed back and said, that's an inappropriate question, or I don't know why you need to know that. If you introduce the questions properly, and there is a bit of an art to that, which I teach people too, of how to set the table, and you ask the question and let the question land, yeah, the customers are happy to answer. And sometimes they go past the time limit of the meeting. They're so engaged in answering the question. So I think I would just say that try to remember there's a reason the customers end up talking 80% of the conversation. It's because they engage with the question so much, and any hesitation is probably something that's just our discomfort in doing something new.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I hope I answered the question.
You absolutely did.
Okay.
I was nodding. People can't see me nodding. I'm nodding just so much. If you watch it on YouTube, you can see that. But there for the rest go. Of you, the other thing, and you touched on this a little bit, but it's not like you're leading with that question. Like you're taking them down a path. It's part of a larger conversation. It's not just immediately confronting.
Yeah.
That matters.
I think that's really important. And I just want to say one more time, one of the most frequent responses I get after the kind of the, that's a good question from the customer is they say, yeah, I get calls all the time. So again, you're not creating this false scenario. They actually are getting calls. So once they acknowledge that, then you can talk, okay, how do you typically respond? And then I actually have a follow-up, which has proven to be good, which is, All right, thanks. And you always thank them for being candid and for helping you by being candid. That's really helpful. That's exactly the kind of answer that's helpful to us. Is there something that a competitor might say in their outreach that would definitely get you to turn your head and look in their direction? And then you get stuff that's, ooh, that there's a problem they have that we're not solving. There's a feature other people are offering that we should look at. There's a content topic that they're really focused on that we can share with our marketing team. So that I just wanted to leave that thought on the competitor thing. If you need more reasons or motivation to ask that question, that's the kind of thing that happens.
Yeah. And I think if you ask people a question, just what else are you looking for from us? Or is there anything missing? There's less context there. Whereas you do something amazing where you put people in this situation in their mind. You transport them there. And what that does is it actually bypasses the critical faculty a little bit and goes straight to the subconscious. So you remove a little bit of that resistance. And there's nothing like shady about this. Just the brain loves a story. We love picturing being in a situation, being in the room. I wouldn't have the answer to that question. But if you put me on a call with the competitor, oh, what am I listening for? Now I can think of it. It really gives amazing context now that you mention it.
Yeah. And what you just said makes me think of another aspect to this that I didn't mention. And that is the reason I don't recommend people to say, so what's missing and what should we do next? That is our job. That's our company's job.
Yeah.
Don't ask them, the customer, to do your job. Ask about them. Ask about the problems that need to be solved. Ask about the job they're trying to accomplish independent of our product or outside of our product or solution. So that's why customers do give shorter answers when you ask, what's missing? It's just not their job. Really not their job.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure if this is something that works or you've tried, but would it be possible to use these kind of questions internally? Like when talking to the C-suite and trying to understand their perspective and trying to communicate value of CS, just is there a way to use this internally in every way, like to your CSMs cross-functionally, up, down, and sideways?
Yes. Short answer, yes. And I'll explain how that came about. So if you view yourself in your role as having stakeholders and constituents in your department or outside of your department, then the answer is yes. And you can think of them as internal customers. There's different ways to think about it. The reason I know that it works is because, and this is one of the interesting things about putting a tool set and a framework out there, is that people come back and they say, oh, I used it in an internal conversation with our product team or our sales team. And so it's the same premise, asking about other people's priorities will get them to open up more than asking for immediate feedback on what we're doing. That's number one. And I'll go one step further. The other use case, I'll call it, that came back was job interviews, that on both sides, that people who were looking for jobs said, I took one of your questions and asked like the board question of the person who was interviewing me, and they just thought it was the best question. They'd never heard it before. So you're demonstrating as a candidate curiosity. You're also going to get insights about whether the person who's interviewing you has a great answer to that. So it's really another lovely surprise, I'll say, or benefit of putting the stuff out there, is that's the kind of stuff you hear back. And then if you're interviewing someone, you can look at the list of questions and figure out which of those questions might be good to ask as a hiring manager or even in HR. Yeah, I think it's just, as you point out, and as the whole premise of the podcast is, it's a lot of it is just people really appreciate when you're authentically curious about them, and people want to be understood and heard. There's so much that you can move the needle by just simply the act of asking and listening. Even if you don't end up being in the customer's shoes 100%, sure, that's the ideal. But if you ask the customer pre and post, and I had a conversation with a chief customer officer yesterday who did this, how well do we understand your business? 40% of customers said we understand the business. But then you go on a listening tour, whether your level of insight as to each individual customer increases, that's TBD. But then you do the post, how well do we understand your business? 80% said yes. So just the act of listening and people wanting to feel heard goes a long way.
I love a listening tour. I did that when I was at like a Fortune 500 company, and it was the first time I got to do that. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Because it was such a benefit, and it was part of our advocacy program, like our referral and advocacy structure, because it really did. It was like, oh God, these guys really care. They really do their diligence. And I think what you're saying, what I'm getting from what you're saying about the questions and how they can be used, these are questions that work on humans. It doesn't have to be, what about this? What about this? Like, they work on humans because we like to hear ourselves talk. We like to be heard. And it's rare that we get that opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, I don't know if this is going to make sense for everybody. For me, I think about when I met my wife or just other relationships. When the person can't seem to get enough of learning about who you are, it's a great feeling for you. And those long conversations, tell me about this, tell me your life story. It just makes us feel good. And that is one of it's just the hierarchy of needs, as you pointed out. So all we're doing here is applying that to treat customers like humans, really. That's what you said.
Crazy thought.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, humans are a lot harder to deal with than products and computers.
They are. But I think I'm just following your lead here, that if you think of them as a human first, user second, mm-hmm. customer third, and not a cohort, not an ICP, not a persona, mm-hmm. Someone the other day said avatar. Those are, I don't want to say dehumanizing, because that's not the right word, and it's a much stronger word than that. But just, that's fine if you want to analyze the customer base or the market that way. But when you're engaging with customers, unless you're giving a speech like one to many, that's why I always rail about slides getting in the way, is because people shouldn't really need slides to have a conversation with another human being unless they're trying to communicate something really important. But even then, don't make the slide the center of the meeting, because nothing inhibits real interaction and engagement like slides. It's just awful.
What's funny, my very last podcast was about presentations, and I hate doing them possibly as much as you do, which is a lot. And I'm not visual at all. They get in my way of saying anything. And like you say, having a conversation. But I was seeing so many people doing it wrong and having it hurt new leaders, like treating it like a Word document or cue cards and death by PowerPoint. I think there is a way to use it to visually tell a story. And I think you can use data to be like, all right, here's where we were. Here's how far we've come.
Oh, 100%.
But that's really it. And I talk about the 10, 20, 30 rule. No more than 10 slides, no less than 20 font, no longer than 30 minutes. And if you can make it less, please do. Like, I do the 3-slide challenge. But a lot of times the internal conversations, like if you need to talk to the C-suite and get a strategic initiative across the line and get them to understand it, I say, be brief. Bring charts, tie it to revenue, because they need that context. But the customer, it's so funny, we do it backwards. We're like, oh, here's what's going on. Here's what we need internally. And then we show all these slides to the customer who could care less and who doesn't need it. I think it's the opposite. And it's when I first told people, I don't think you should bring QBR decks. They're like, do you have a QBR template? It's something I get every single time. And I'm like, here you go. It's a blank piece of paper. Don't use it. Ask them this. Like, you can show them metrics that show the ROI if you have them, but make it just, here's the Spotify Wrapped, as we all like to think of it.
Yeah. 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 No, 100%. I guess I come on so strongly about QBR fatigue and slides that people think I'm saying never use slides. And I'm certainly not saying that. What I'm saying is what you said, in the right context, at the right dosage, and if you will. But if you ask customers I think Forrester had a study a few years ago that said 82% of executives would rather have a conversation than sit through a presentation. And I think if you deconstruct that, you realize that slides are a form of guardrails and control. And executives want to talk about what's important to them. Then they don't like having the conversation driven through the lens of your agenda and your slides. They want to stop and ask questions. And at some point, just close the slide now. Let's just chat. And we'll come back to it if it makes sense.
It's so funny to me when people get upset when people ask questions in the middle of a presentation. Does it even matter that I'm here? Can I go?
Right.
80% would rather have a conversation. I'd rather be at the dentist than have a presentation given to me most of the time.
What a great one.
The way it's done. And they give me nitrous for a cleaning because that's how much I hate the dentist. Yeah, I'm a big wimp. I am not strong on that front. Okay, what other questions did I have? Because I had so many good ones. Oh, so I talk a lot about how when you're starting something new and you're trying something new, tiny steps are really important. They're proven to work better. They're easier to adopt. But also, it's less overwhelming. It's less scary. Is there a way that people could do this? What's a bite-sized way they could just start today?
Absolutely. And I saw that question on your list, and I was hoping you'd ask it because it's something I've learned that when I started teaching teams and I would come out with this list of 60 questions, and I realized after a while they were overwhelmed and thought I was telling them to ask 16 questions in a row. And of course I wasn't, but I didn't think about it. So what I always tell people is to take one or two questions and feel the question and get comfortable with it. And in the training, I say, get out your calendar and I want you to write down the next couple meetings you have. And I want you to take this list of questions and just pick two that you feel would be appropriate for that particular customer. But the reality is you could just have one question at the ready to dip your toe in. And then once you get them to open up, of course, then the listening skills come into play. And again, I do the same thing. There's five buckets of listening techniques and skills. And one of them is start with a quiet mind, which is to just take 30 seconds. You don't have to do transcendental meditation or yoga. Just clear your brain a little bit before any important conversation. Center on the customer as a human who's trying to get their job done, et cetera. So that's one of five. And another one is embrace silence, which we talked about a little bit. And so of the five, I say, look, I know there's a lot here. You can't get better at all these things quickly, but you can pick one for the next 2 weeks and just focus on it, like embracing the silence, which is probably the hardest.
That's the hardest, yeah.
It's, again, we're all trained to yap and talk so much that we tend to react too quickly. So I think just picking one area of work, one tip, one technique, one question for a 2 week period is plenty. It's a good way to get started because we are, as much as I say, customers love these questions and they love to be heard. We still, again, especially in customer success, are tuned to do it the way we've always done it, which is in some ways that's my enemy. That's my boogeyman. Is the way we've always done it. And so I understand that. And yeah, I think it's a great question of how do you take small bites? And it works. It really does work because you can see people relieved. Oh, I don't have to ask all these questions and have this big. Yeah, it really works.
That's exactly what I do. And I just did this morning. I have a teaching CSMs to sell workshop that I do sometimes. And a lot of it's about getting comfortable with the idea of sales and just completely learning it in a different way. And basically, I talk about selling through asking questions, understanding problems. Like, you're really just going to be asking questions here. These type, your next call, pick two of these. And I love the 2 weeks. I'm going to steal that. Just have them written down in your notes for the call. I'm going to ask these two questions. You don't have to sell a thing. And people get so, they're just both,
yeah.
And I think that really, it's funny that we have that parallel there, but I think that's because we both know about these things and it works.
And great minds think alike.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Are there any common misconceptions about deep listening and how would you address those?
Again, based on my experience, I know what active listening is. And I know that the classic version of active listening involves a lot of playing back what you heard and confirmation. I find that when people get too wrapped up in that aspect of active listening, it becomes distracting. And all you have to do is, if you use gong or record conversations in any way, shape, or form, is listen to it. And if you keep doing that and summarizing too much, especially things that don't really need to be summarized, that are obvious,
weird,
you find that you'll hear that it feels like it's very herky-jerky. My approach to that is, if you hear something that you really don't understand that needs clarification, or if you want to the other big thing is to connect the dots between something they said 10 minutes ago and something they just said. By all means, summarize it by saying, so I think I heard you say before this is a priority and now you're focused here at your job. I assume there's a, you could draw a line. Oh, absolutely. Or no, actually, those are two different things. But the other one of the listening, the five listening buckets of tips is don't solve or sell, which I know is heresy because our job is to solve and sell. But what I mean by that is don't switch or pivot the flow of the conversation because you thought, I mean, just to jump in, because what you're doing is potentially interrupting the customer's flow. And when they get on a roll and they start opening up about something, that's the most valuable thing that can happen. So don't, when they, as soon as they take a breath or stop, don't just say, oh, we have a training module for that. Or I think you should talk to someone in sales about this. I think that has the potential to breach the goodwill that you're building in the conversation by keep. Now, at the end of the conversation or towards the end, by all means, you'd be negligent if you didn't bring those things up. Just come back to it, but try not to interrupt them. And so I think the active listening thing is something I hear about. Oh, yeah, I know what you do. It's active listening. No, it's not. And there are some differences. And that is one is just really the extreme emphasis on letting the customer talk.
I think that's the difference between active listening and mirroring. And mirroring can be a good technique, but it can get really weird. People keep going a lot of the time, but it's not as authentic. And we don't like it when we're not being authentic and they can feel it.
I agree. Why should it feel like I'm using a technique? Why should they see that I'm using a technique constantly? If you're a natural listening would be my, maybe if I had to name it. It's just CS people especially have such good instincts and judgment. Use your judgment of how to adopt the tools and don't do something that, as you said, feels like you're using a methodology on them. I love
that. The coolest thing is like the most effective methods wind up being yourself. And it's so counter to really the impression that we get before we're in like a more senior leadership. That's why when I talk about executive presence with a lot of people, it's like that what you have in mind is what confidence looks like on a 45-year-old white guy. Nothing wrong with that, married to one, but it's not what it's going to look like on you if that's not you. That's just going to look really weird. I tried to do that and people were like, are you okay? Yeah. Initially. And yeah, like authenticity rules the day. It's just a matter of dipping your toe into it and learning that you're not going to drown and getting less afraid of it and seeing that it works.
I really love the way you said it and what you said. And it resonates with me because until I became a consultant and when I was in the corporate world, I was completely acting the part and not effectively, by the way. And I thought it was just, I'm supposed to get a job in a company and move my way up. And that's one of the lessons I think I passed along with my wife to our kids is it seems like you're supposed to, when you're born, someone stamps your itinerary and says, okay, you're going to grow up, get good grades, go to a brand name college, get married, have kids, buy a house, and et cetera. And no one, it's not written down anywhere. So you have to treat yourself as an individual and say, is this right for me? Do I know enough about myself to do something different and why? And that is so important. And for me, the blessing was being able to be a consultant, and then finding this much more authentic way of expressing myself that was so, I felt so good about, and it seemed to work better than posing, to use a Madonna song, strike the pose, and it just works better. And I think the world is trending towards that, the business world, of being more transparent, authentic. And I'm just glad to see that, because I think it's too stressful for people to get all bottled up and trying to be someone else.
I could not agree more. And that's something where it's funny, like I have the CS Leadership Academy and I teach all the stuff about how to build and scale a CS department, but that's not going to happen in 3 months. It's a 12-week course. Like you're going to learn it. You're going to be able to use that as you go. But the stuff that's going to be transformative in the moment is these kind of realizations and just being able to let go of all you're trying to put on and step into true leadership. And that's why people say more than anything else that like their confidence is what they notice the most.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic.
That's a gift you're giving people. It's priceless.
Yeah.
Priceless. I mean, what more could you want than not only the wisdom and expertise, but also feeling like it's okay to be who you are and carry these things forward? The confidence is, and some people don't appear to need a shot of confidence, but there's so many people, and then maybe they do, and they're just good at hiding it. But I think so many people need not just the skills, but they need to be shown that it's okay to do it a different way and be themselves. So that's why I love what you're doing. I think it's incredibly valuable.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I love it. I had the same experience of, I never wanted to work for myself. That sounded way too chaotic and unpredictable. And then when I actually tried it, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I haven't been doing this the entire time.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it.
So wrapping up here, can you share any sort of resources or tools that are helpful for people in practicing radical authentic discovery?
Yeah, I put out a ton of, anyone who wants to follow me on LinkedIn, Bob London, or go to my website, which is simply Bob London CO. The lack of an M is not a typo. It's just .co. But I would say, more broadly speaking, there are two books that I always recommend. One is You're Not Listening by Kate Murphy. She talks about, and it's, again, human lessons that you can apply at work or at home. The one that I talk about a lot is support, don't shift. Like, when the other person's done talking, it's not your cue to shift to whatever you feel like talking about. It is a cue to encourage them to keep going and understand more. So Kate Murphy, You're Not Listening. The other one is this guy, if you ever wondered how deep someone can geek out on listening, Oscar Trimboli has an unbelievable podcast called Deep Listening and a book of the same name. And again, I just figured, how much new can there be? How deep can someone go on a topic like that? It's magical how much you end up understanding about human nature, psychology, et cetera, just by even just listening to a few of his episodes. So those are two really good resources, I would say.
Awesome. That is next on my list. I'm also going to link those in the show notes, as well as your website where they can find more. The one other thing, if people want to get radical authentic discovery, if they're like, yes, this is something I need, how can they find that?
Oh, the main place to go is boblondon.co. There's a lot of information there about, there's a lot of do-it-yourself actually there that's free. And then there's information on the training I do with teams. But there's also, you'll see a link to something relatively new, which is an on-demand video course that I created, which is a lot cheaper than the private training. It's meant to be a no-brainer price for now. And it also has access to a community, like a coaching community, which is just getting off the ground. It's a little bit of a ghost town right this minute. And so that link is on my website as well. So I'm trying to address all the price points and use cases in order to help as many people as possible who want to learn this kind of stuff. So those are the places to go.
That's fantastic. I'm actually going to take the DIY course because I geek out on this so much. Like, why would I not? I had 3 launches back to back, which prevented me until now, but done. And now I have some learning time. So I'm definitely taking you up on that. I'm never done learning.
Awesome to have an influencer such as you taking my course. I'll have to get some feedback from you afterwards. But
I have gotten, I'm excited.
I have gotten, it's relatively new, but I have gotten really good feedback, just that I'm not a trainer. I wasn't trained to be a trainer. And what people have told me is that, again, there's an authenticity in the content, which the best compliment someone can give me is they feel like it's speaking to their needs very directly and is strung together in a nice way. But having said that, I value it more when other people tell me that versus me saying it. So if you...
Right, of course.
Good, bad, or indifferent, whatever your feedback is, or anybody's feedback, I always want to hear it.
Sounds good. I will give you feedback. I will not be shy.
I'll say, hey, if you got a call from my competitor, how would you react? Yeah. I'll ask you. I'll test you on that one.
I'm not going to ask on here who your competitors are, because I don't know that anyone else is doing this.
No, I've found a few. No one's doing what I do exactly, but there are plenty of substitutes and alternatives, believe me.
Oh, if there aren't, there will be, believe me. But thank you so much. This has been incredible. Every time I listen to you talk, I'm freaking riveted. So I can't wait to take your course. I always love talking to you. And we all just thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. I everything you said, I would put right back at you. And just, I think you're doing an amazing service for the community, and the community is lucky to have you.
How fantastic was that? I don't know about you, but I loved that conversation. Guys, let me know, do you like me having guests? If so, I can have more instead of talking to myself like a crazy person. I always intended to do a little bit of both, but I'd love to hear your feedback on it. So that's all we have for you here today on Psychology of Customer Success. Thank you so much for joining us. I will, of course, put all the links to Bob's Rad Method, his website, where you can find them, where you can find him on LinkedIn, the books we mentioned, all those goodies in the show notes. So check those out there. And other than that, I'm a real person, so come say hi to me on LinkedIn. You can DM me. I generally hang out there. You can comment on a post. I love talking to CS people. So until next time, take care of yourself, get some rest, and make sure to share this with your CS bestie.